Alex, thank you for joining me, man.
Hello, Todd.
So, what's happening? We've kind of taken our eye off the ball, but more territory is being lost in Donbass. Tell us about that.
Well, we are in the fifth year of this ethnocidal war. Mm-hmm. Fifth year. Nobody could believe. 4 years ago, nobody could believe this. And
but you've been right. You've been telling me for a long time it's going to go on and on and on.
Yes, and from my observation, this is the fifth wave of escalation caused by external actors outside of Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And the current wave of escalation is meant, is forecasted for the summer. I mean, we are at the end of May. So both sides declared that there would be offensive operation. Russia declared that there would be offensive operation on Zaporizhia and Donetsk, and it is forecasted that the new operation would eventually target Kyiv. And asymmetrically enough, Syrsky, General Commander Syrsky, declared that Ukraine will commence offensive operation on Donetsk region in June. So I guess what is going on?
Yeah. Does Ukraine have the ability to do that? Military capability to do that?
I haven't heard about any of additional supply of weapons and arms in the last 6 months. Mm-hmm. As you may have heard, the United States stopped supply in August of last year. Mm-hmm. However, the European Union countries supplied unknown amounts of calibers and weaponry to Ukraine. I don't know the numbers. So I guess that there are some numbers of weapons for the offensive operations, but just 2 weeks ago, the mobilization efforts have been intensified in Ukraine. The private bounty hunters simply raid each city, each village in Ukraine. My friends who are men within the drafting age, they simply have to sit down at home, and their women or their mothers go to buy groceries and food. Mm-hmm. And one of my friends even had to escape from the bounty hunters riding a bike. Mm. And when he went to buy bread in a food market, a shop attendant hit him behind the counter.
Really?
Bounty hunters, yeah, tried to get him.
Wow.
So I'm looking at videos in the internet. I haven't sent you those mobilization kidnapping videos lately, but
there's plenty of them there.
The aggression of bounty hunters mm-hmm. increased to the point that I don't believe anymore in the nation. Yeah. I don't believe anymore in the good intentions of the government, so-called government of Ukraine, which is being called government right now of Ukraine, which kidnaps people and kicks people and kills people on the streets. Mm-hmm. What am I talking about? I'm talking about right now is the same as killing people on the streets.
Yeah.
So, in my understanding, there's a civil war, and there's an ethnocide towards the
white Christian population.
White Christian population of Ukraine, and there's the military war. So there are three wars currently going on in Ukraine.
Yeah, it's so. Before we move on, Zelensky wanted more patriots. I guess that's been cut off. They sent a letter, and Trump didn't respond. Are they going to get to the point where they can't defend against incoming strikes?
Yes, and just several days ago, there was a huge strike on Kyiv. because Zelensky ordered to shoot the rockets onto Russian territory, on Donetsk region territory. And Putin got really furious about those strikes from Ukraine. And that is why just 5 days ago, there was a huge response strike onto Kyiv, and some rockets hit several military buildings in Kyiv. And one of the rockets even flew to the near the building near Verkhovna Rada, near the building where you visited Kyiv.
Years ago.
It's been quite a year. So it was the kind of the revenge strike on Kyiv, and apparently the air defense units, Patriots, that allocated near Kyiv and allocated in the center of Kyiv, could not hit the quantity of missiles incoming onto the center of Kyiv. Only several Patriot missiles were fired onto the incoming Russian missiles, and that's why the ballistic missiles shot from Russia hit their targets in Kyiv. Mm-hmm. Of course, there were a couple of photos and videos that some of those rockets did not hit intended. For example, one rocket hit the bazaar near the military factory on Lukyanovsk metro station. But I think that was one of the rockets, and it was kind of, as you can call it, collateral damage or side damage.
So the last question before we can move to your deck, but Zelensky is all about buying, I think, 150, Gripen aircraft from Sweden. These are like old technology, right? Can they even function in this battlefield, do you think?
I'm in my next phase of learning about the U.S. airplanes. I visited several air shows recently. Mm-hmm. And I read about Gripen and the talks to get those Gripen air fighters have commenced 4 years ago. And what? For 4 years, they could not give those old fighters to Ukraine. What's the purpose of buying an airplane which was developed in 1970s? I mean, this Gripen airplane is good for. It's even less technically advanced in comparison to MiG-29. This is an old technology. The radars are very short. They cannot even fly to the front line. They can't even shoot the air-to-ground missiles. Anybody who goes who will fly on those Gripen airplanes near the front line, those are suicide raids. So
it's almost like a kamikaze drone,
you can use those Gripens as kamikaze drones, just fly and just kill a tank, or kill some commanding point on Russian front line to side, and that's it. Those are kamikaze airplanes. No point of sending them to Ukraine. At this point of time, there is no point of sending them to Ukraine.
All right, should we get into your slide deck?
Yes, let's take a look at some of the slides.
Okay.
All right, a little sit-rep about Ukraine. Next slide, please. So let's take a look at the front line. So you can see that, the picture is very similar to what we have seen 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is similar, but the front line is moving. Mm-hmm. And there were major battles fought for and around several cities in Ukraine. And as you can see on this map, if you could compare this to the same kind of map 4 years ago, mm-hmm. The Ukrainian army is withdrawing. Mm-hmm. So let's take a look at the next slide. And this is the region of Zaporizhzhia. And what's interesting to look here is that the front line is alive. And the current advance is near Orikhiv village, little village, approximately 10 kilometers from the front line. and the current advances in Kamianske and Stepove. And what's interesting to look at this little region of the war is that just 2 weeks ago, the local authorities of those villages near Pavlika, Lukyanovka, Zapashna, Mikhailovka, you can see this just in the middle, they declared the enforced evacuation. So that means that they prepared the population to escape the front line. And they do it in the last kind of resort. So that means that the Russian advance north on this region will be in those little villages, and Ukrainian army do not have the means to defend those districts. Interesting for me to look at this little district, because my sister volunteered and she got drafted. Mm-hmm. And guess what? She spent 2 weeks at the hospital with the lungs inflammation. And 3 days ago, she got released from this hospital.
Was that because she was in a trench or something and got...
No. My sister volunteered 1 month ago to join the army as a private. And she got flu and she received an inflammation during her pioneer camp training near Zhytomyr. Mm-hmm. And she was hospitalized 3 weeks ago, and she spent 2 weeks with the inflammation on the drop machine because she had the inflammation. Mm-hmm. So my sister was sent near the front line, near Zaporizhzhia, because what they do is that they take fresh bodies that they catch on streets, so they take those volunteers who are young enough to actually do something, like my sister. She's young enough and she's aggressive enough to join the army. So she got sent near the front line in Zaporizhzhia. Guess where they will send her? They will send her near Zapashna. They will send her near Zaporizhzhia to the trenches. I'm shocked. So let's go to the next.
You're shocked because they're sending women there, or what? Or
because my sister got drafted. I'm shocked and I'm furious. And I'm furious because, and I'm shocked because they don't care. They simply take fresh flesh and they send anybody to the front line because they're looking for somebody just to do anything on the front line. There's no strategic
just to catch bullets, essentially.
It is basically catch bullet and stand where you stand. That's it. There's no strategic operational command. I mean, looking at the maps, looking at the news, looking at what I hear from people, looking at what I hear from people who live in those little villages in front line near Zaporizhzhia and Kryvyi Rih and Dnipropetrovsk, my conclusion is that there is no strategic or operational tactical command. Mm-hmm. The battalion commanders, they do not understand the strategy of defense, and they do not understand the strategy of holding the lines. Because the lines are moving, and this is my personal conclusion, and I'm furious about this.
Yeah, okay, next slide.
Next slide. So this is Pokrovsk, and my little story about Pokrovsk is that several years ago I was a project manager of the humanitarian operations, and we were one of three charities that actually delivered food, medicine, and generators to the gray zones near the front line. And my story about this map is that you can see little city of Pokrovsk and Mirnograd. So Pokrovsk was lost 3 weeks ago. Mirnograd was lost, 2 weeks ago? And we, as a charity, we had our logistical relay point in a high school in Pokrovsk. And Iskander missile went straight into this high school. Six of our volunteers were killed immediately. We had our the food that we stored in the school was supplied to us by World Trade World Food Program, WFP, and we also had donor supplies from American private donors. I called WFP. I called our American donors and I told them, could you please send your journalists or could you please send your investigators or prosecutors to this high school? This is the criminal military criminal event. If you don't care about the quantity of food you supply to us, well, we care about our volunteers.
Yeah.
We care about our people because we deliver to people in need.
Your government doesn't care about you. That's why you need a medical emergency kit. It contains life-saving medications like ivermectin, Z-Pak, and antibiotics. Stock them before they block them.
Divorce is tough, but your finances don't have to be. I'm David Cross, and I'm a certified divorce financial analyst practitioner. My job is to help you get a fair financial settlement in your divorce and to guide you to smarter money decisions. Find out how we can help you. U.S. Asset Management, it's your money and your future.
Guess what? No one wanted to go to Pokrovsk. They told me that they're busy.
Yeah.
They told me, Andrew, you should be careful. Take care of yourself. So just 1 year ago, this map, which you see right now on the street, was approximately 100 kilometers to the right. And this is why for a person who's looking at this maps, if you're not attentive, the maps, they look the same, but they're not the same. This means that the front line is alive and people hurt and people withdraw. And next point of loss will be little villages and little cities near Dnipropetrovsk. And it is approximately 100 kilometers to Dnipropetrovsk. People do not realize the distance. 100 kilometers is 60 miles. 60 miles is what? It is 1 hour on the tank. Okay, next slide. So this little little map is from Kramatorsk, and you can see here that Russians advanced near Kramatorsk and Slavyansk. So Slavyansk, I mean, the Russian forces are on the outskirts of Slavyansk, and Slavyansk city has been evacuated approximately 6 months ago. And based on the map, I can tell you that Russian forces are just on the outskirts of Kramatorsk. And when Russian forces take Slavyansk and Kramatorsk, they will simply close the cauldron, because it, right here on the map, you see that there is a cauldron forming. And then Russian forces are approximately, 100 kilometers to Pavlograd. And Pavlograd, on the left, you can see Pavlograd on the left. Pavlograd is basically an outskirt of Dnipropetrovsk, and there's no terrain to defend. So whenever Russian forces go left of Kramatorsk and Slavyansk, and they go to Petropavlivka, there is no terrain to defend. It's a pure flat terrain. Of course, the drones will fly and destroy Russian troops and trucks and tanks and so on and so on. But if Russians decide to make a ground strike, or ground, how do you call it in military terms?
In advance?
Fast advance using the tanks and using the airplanes. They can do it. They can do it within 2 hours.
Yeah,
let's take a look on the next. So Sumy, recently there has been an evacuation enforced, announced near Sumy. And we don't see a lot of battalions of Russians near Sumy. Well, let's calculate 1, 2, 3, four, five, six, there are six, seven battalions of Russian forces near Sumy. But they advance, and the evacuation was declared in those villages, and Ukrainians simply do not understand what's going on in Sumy. Next slide. Deserters. The quantity of deserters is enormous. Mm-hmm. And what's more problematic is that those deserters try to hide from the bounty hunters. So the bounty hunters try to find deserters, and bounty hunters try to find fresh blood and fresh bodies for the unlawful, illegal military campaign of private army of Ukraine. Next slide. The quantity of deserters is estimated above 500,000 people.
Wow.
And that means that the estimated quantity of deserters per month is more than 10,000 of people or several thousand per week. So that means that...
How do they do that? Do they just go to the front and then slip away in the night? Or do you know how they're doing this?
Yes, exactly. They slip away from the night, or they pay their commander 2,000, 3,000 to just to get away from the front line. Mm-hmm. The price to get away from the front line with the paper is $6,000. Mm-hmm. So if you want to get a paper from your commander for just for 2 days, 3 days, you pay $3,000 and you get away for 3 days. Mm. And within 3 days, you need to reach your, let's say, your local village or your city, your family, and then you will hide. Or there's the evacuation price. You pay $12,000. The ambulance comes to the front line, take you, and you ride the ambulance to your family. It's called the ambulance evacuation to your family, $12,000.
So how are they getting across the border, or are they? I mean, are they just staying?
No. The deserters will stay in Ukraine and they hide with their families. The price to get outside of Ukraine is $26,000. So let's say you want to get out of the front line. So you pay $20,000 for the ambulance to mm-hmm. be evacuated on an ambulance. And additional $26,000 to get out of the borders with the papers. Well, if you don't need the papers because you don't want to come back to Ukraine after, you can pay $12,000 and people, so $20,000 on the ambulance to get out of the front line, $12,000 to get through the borders without the papers. So you pay $30,000 for your price, for your life.
And wow.
So some people actually paid this kind of money and they tried to get away from the front line. Simple people pay, the vacation is $500 per day. 3 days vacation, $2,000, $3,000, depending on where the troops are located. Mm-hmm. So some people simply pay the vacation price and then they disappear and they don't come back to the front line.
Yeah.
So this is how it works.
Gotcha. Okay. Next slide.
Next slide. Yeah, let's take a look at the next slide. So there were more people have began to come to this Marathon Shmarathon. There's only one TV channel in Ukraine. And some people have begun to speak about the quantity of corruption on the war. And this little guy during the primetime lifetime show, he said that there's an estimated $1 million collected in bribes for the kidnapping and bounty hunting in Ukraine. Well, I have seen other expert opinions, and the expert opinions are that the war in Ukraine collects estimated $2 billion in bribes from the population mm-hmm. of Ukraine. And Zelensky and Yermak personally obtain approximately $300 million per year in bribes from the people who don't want to serve the army and who simply want to pay little bribe and do not go to the army.
Yeah.
So it is a big business machine right now in Ukraine.
Wow.
Next slide. So all men in Ukraine are forced to download this idiotic software application. It's called Aberig, it's called Reserve, meaning that you're in reserve and you have to be electronically registered within the system. So this little reserve software tracks your location, and if you do not appear and if you do not register in this little registration tool, the government of Ukraine, which is not the government, but it's authorical, they if they arrest you on the street, and if you don't have this reserve on your mobile phone, they will arrest you and throw you into the jail, and then arrest your bank accounts, and then they will arrest your apartment. Mm-hmm. So guess what? The men are forced to download this, and men need to go and register for this digital register tool. So let's say that you register in this, but you do not appear at the bounty hunting mobilization point. They have your address already in the system, so they arrest you again, and then they arrest your bank accounts, they arrest your apartment, and they take away your car. So for me, I personally do not have this, but I have been already violated. I have already violated the not a law of Ukraine, because if I download this, they will take away my apartment. If I do not download this, they take away my apartment.
Yeah.
So what should they do?
So what Americans need to realize is Ukraine is a test bed, and all of this technology for mobilization and is all coming here. I mean, you've got the guy that just won against Massey in Kentucky is talking about bringing the draft back in the U.S. So this it's a test bed, and they're testing all this technology that they want to use here. So back to you.
Yeah, next slide. Let's take a look at the next slide. And the next slide is quite shocking. Don't get me wrong. I'm not anti-Semitic. I think that people from Israel should live in Israel, and people of Ukraine should live in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. I'm not nationalistic. I'm internationalistic. American society is very much mixed, and I respect all nations and ethnies who live in the United States. But looking at the pictures, I think that Ukraine is not for Ukrainians anymore. Hmm. How in the world, and this is not the first occasion, how in the world Hasids, which you see on the picture, come and have a meeting with the head of not-so-national policy of Ukraine, and the national commander of not-so-national policy of Ukraine takes orders from Hasids from Israel. Hmm. And guess what? The national not-so-national policy of Ukraine is not a governmental entity. I found documents that the police in Ukraine is a private company. Hmm. And as a private company, this private company is hired to help private bounty hunters to hunt men on the streets of villages and cities in Ukraine.
Wow.
So I'm looking at this, and it's not a conspiracy theory. I am not a conspiracy theorist. I'm an observer. I'm an analyst, and I'm looking at the pictures, I'm looking at the events, and I draw the line. Next slide. Next slide, please. And the last slide for today, Yermak, who is one of the usurpers in Ukraine currently, and he's not even a governmental employee, because he served as the head of the administration, and the head of administration of Zelensky is not a governmental position. It's not in the constitution. So he's an unconstitutional usurper. So Nabu And NABУ is a National Anti-Corruption Bureau of Ukraine, which was organized by several people from the Federal Bureau of Investigation. So NABU charged and arrested Yermak several weeks ago. They jailed him, and they could not arrest him. He went out of the jail. He paid 140 million hryvnia. So this is approximately what? $2.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
And he went out of the jail. Hmm. And location is unknown. And nobody knows where Yermak is.
So he just paid his way out, essentially.
He paid his way out using the money he stole from the United States government.
Yeah, wow.
And NABU, as an arm of FBI, they could not do anything. What a surprise. Well, I knew that this would be a show, a theater, but I had my hope that if NABU arrested Yermak, they would hold him in the jail, but they could not.
Well, Soros, I mean, NABU is run, it was created by Soros, right? I mean, it's extra governmental organization that it's kind of a control mechanism, I think. So if they don't want to control it, they're not going to control it, right? Am I wrong?
NABU was created by several people who served at the embassy of the United States. And of course, this organization, NABU, was influenced by several cadres from Soros-related organizations.
Interesting. Well, my friend, I feel your pain for your country. We are fighting the good fight to try to end this war. We'll keep it up, and I really appreciate your time. Is there anything else you want to talk about?
I think this is it for today. Thank you for this little sit-rep.
Yes, we will have you back, Alex. Thank you very much.
Okay. My friend. Bye, Todd.
Take care.